Our brother prayed in his prayer for the young ones. That's you, man. That they might realize early that there's a reason for being in this world more than just being here. You didn't say it just like that. And then he prayed, let them know, Lord, that you've got them in your hands. And about that time I said, phew. Because I was torn between a couple of sermons, and the one I'm led to now is what I'd call purpose of heart and handfuls of purpose. May God bless. Be praying. Some of you may be a little ahead of me. When you think of somebody that said they had purpose in their heart, who might that have been? Way back a long time ago. Let me start reading. Daniel chapter 1. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, into Jerusalem and besieged it. That means he attacked it. And he attacked it hard and heavy. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand. The battle's been lost. God's people are captive. They're slaves. The walls are fallen. The city's on fire. And the king spake unto Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, and he said, bring certain of the children of Israel and of the king's seed and of the princes, children in whom was no blemish, but well favored, skillful in all wisdom, cunning in knowledge, understanding science, and such as had ability in them to stand in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the learning and the tongue of the Chaldeans. When this says children of Israel, it's not like it usually says children of Israel. You know, when he says that, it usually means all those from infants to ancients. From the babies to the old ones, they were all the children of Israel. But these are the children of Israel. I mean, children of Israel. Little boys, they are. They're not infants. They're old enough they can recognize that somebody's seen something in these boys and girls. It could be those girls, too, that can have purpose of heart. But it so happens that these are boys. They're children of Israel. They're little fellas. Later on in this, Daniel will speak of himself as a child. Now, how old are they? I don't know. I can't tell for sure. But I've got an 11-year-old and a 7-year-old grandboy. And they're both past age being called child. Now, you can call them a little man, or you can call them a big guy, but don't you call me a little boy, because I'm not going to boy anymore. So I don't know how old they were, but I'm going to figure in my mind that there's somewhere between being a baby and maybe being a man. That's a wide range, but I'm talking about being where they think they're a man. You know, a 4-year-old doesn't mind being called a child. He doesn't know any better. He doesn't hardly know he's big yet, but by the time they get just a little bigger. You know what I'm saying? So I'm just trying to speculate. I think we've got some young children. I think we've got some pretty little fellas. But they've been picked out. Now, times aren't good. They're being drugged from home, drugged from mama and daddy. These boys have become slaves at a young age. And they've been isolated even from the group and taken into the king's palace to grow up to be slaves, but smart slaves. That's a real advantage, I suppose, but they're still nothing but captives in a foreign land, far from home. And when I say far from home, I mean far from their family, too. It's not an easy time for them, I'm sure. From here, that king says, now here's what we're going to do. We're going to give these boys here some special king food. You know, make them grow up big and strong. But who knows what's in that mess? And you know, these boys, they're old enough to know that they're supposed to eat what they're supposed to eat and nothing else. Now, who told them what they're supposed to eat was God himself, and they understand that. And what they're supposed to eat is kind of limited to a little narrow thing, when, especially when it comes to meat. And they may get this first pot of stew, and they look in there and they say, wonder what that is. It could be squirrel. We're not supposed to eat that. It could be rabbit. We're not supposed to eat that. We don't know what it is. So we just better not eat it. And you know what it says about them at that point? Said they purposed. Said he purposed in his heart, but it lists the other boys too. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego along with Daniel in this thing. It's called, Daniel said, we purposed later on. So it's all for them. They purpose in their heart that they're not going to eat anything except to be on God's list of what you're supposed to eat. And they're not sure what that is, but they say, just send us pulse and water. Well, I wasn't sure what that meant, and I looked it up, and somebody, when I looked it up, I don't know if they're right or not, they said it was beans. Beans and water. And you know what? I don't believe those beans had a ham hock in them either. Because that would have made them illegal beans. They're just plain beans. And country folks know plain beans aren't very good. But that's what they're willing to eat because they purposed in their heart that they would not defile themselves before their God. And remember how big they are? They're just about that tall, man. That's how big they are. But they've already decided something. When it says purpose in the heart, that means deep down in your bones that you say, I'm going to serve my God and nobody else. I'm going to do what he says, no matter what anybody says. I'm going to follow my Jesus. That's what I'm going to do. That's purpose of heart. And you don't have to get old to have it. You can start having it when you're mighty young. You sure can. And you're supposed to have it when you're mighty young. You sure are. Well, they gave him these beans. That guard, he liked Daniel. Said he loved that Daniel boy. The Lord drew his heart toward Daniel. Isn't God good? When Joseph was in prison, it says over and over, and the Lord was with him, and God was with him. God was with these boys, and the chief guard really liked these boys, and he said, man, you don't know what you're asking me to do. The king's given me a command what you're supposed to eat, and if I don't give you that, you're going to end up looking frail and feeble and kind of sickly and poorly. I don't know if y'all use that word down here. Anyway, that's not King James. But that's what that guard was afraid of, and he said, Daniel said, just prove me. That means that's what a test. Just test me for about 10 days. You give my buddies and me, you give us the beans and the water, and you give the rest of them whatever that stuff is. And then at the end of 10 days, guess what happened? You don't have to guess. You've read the story. Old Daniel and his buddies, they got fat cheeks. They rosy all over. They looking like a picture of health. And these other boys that eat that whatever that other was, they not developing like these. Oh, God was with them. I don't know if there's that much nourishment in beans, but God was with them. And they look good. And I bet that old guard, he says, man, I'm glad that worked out. And they became the smartest of the boys. So the king picked them out as special. And they were smarter than all the locals. And all the rest of them that might have eaten whatever they ate. They purposed in their heart to serve the Lord. And the Lord was with them. And it says at the end of chapter 1 that Daniel lived there until the reign of Cyrus. Now, what does that mean? Well, according to the Bible, that meant 70 years. So if he is 5, by the time Cyrus and his henchman Darius, two kings of two nations, come together and whoop up on Nebuchadnezzar, and now they have the land, but it's been 70 years. And we go to Daniel chapter 6. And it says it's in the reign of King Darius. So now, however how old Daniel was, if he was 5, he's 75. If he was 4, he's 74. Anyway, 70 anything is an old man. I'm sorry. He's an old man now. And you know what can happen to old men? Sometimes old men can lose their purpose of heart. They get old and they get tired. And they get to a point where they say, you know, enough's enough. Was that Daniel? No, sirree. He's an old man. And he's still got the same thing he had as a 5-year-old. He's got purpose in his heart. And he's serving that king, and God's promoted Daniel. He's a high-ranking president now. And the rest of the locals, they don't like this foreigner being the president. And they connive against him. And they say, the only way we're going to get him is against his God. That's where he'll stick to his guns and serve, because he's got purpose of heart, remember? They've noticed that through the years. Purpose of heart will shine. Don't see that. That praises God. But he's still got purpose of heart. And he's in his 70s now anyway. And they say, here's our plan. They come in and they fluff up that king's ego. And they say, here's what you need to do, big king boy. What you could do right here, get you all kind of glory. If you just made it a new law that nobody can pray to any god or any king or anybody but you for 30 days. And that king, I can just see him. He's feeling his oats. That's going right straight to his big head. And he said, that sounds good to me. I'll just be God for a month. Wow. I think the king had some good traits. I think he just let him slide there for a little bit. But you know what he did? He signed the writing that said anybody that prays to anybody, anybody that prays to anybody, but King Darius for 30 days goes to the lions. The king signed it, and according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, that can't be changed now. It's law, unchangeable law. The king can't even change it. Daniel chapter 6. Daniel chapter 6, verse 10. Now when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went into his house, and his windows being open in the chamber toward Jerusalem, he kneeled upon his knees 3 times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God as he did aforetime. Just like he'd been doing, he kept on doing. He was putting his noose in the neck. Well, it's worse than that. He's putting his head in the lion's mouth. But he did just like he had done aforetime. Now, I don't know how far back that aforetime means right there. Maybe he'd been doing that the last few days, but I got a feeling that aforetime goes clear back to he's 5 years old and he purposed in his heart not to serve anybody but God. Just like he had done aforetime, he keeps going. And he keeps serving that God and he keeps praying to that God, but he's caught. They've nabbed him. They caught him in that of praying to God. That's not a sin. But it was against the law in that day, in that land. So now they drag him before the king, and the king, he's in a terrible shape. Daniel's been his friend, he really has. Daniel's done him good. He hates to do this to Daniel, but he signed it, and there's nothing he can do about it. They take Daniel, and they throw him in that den of lions. And they roll a stone over the door, and the king sealed the stone with his ring. Nobody can open this door till tomorrow. And he said the king went home and he spent the night fasting. It doesn't say praying, but you tell me anybody's ever fasting without praying. If you're going to get into to the point you're fasting, I believe you're praying too. So I'm going to assume he's praying and fasting all night long. And he says he didn't call in his musical instruments to entertain him that night. He didn't turn on his TV. He didn't crank up the radio. He didn't get on his cell phone. He didn't get on the internet. He just laid there all night and was sad, fasting and praying to God for a hopeless case. Oh God. Oh God. Please God. He gets up early the next morning, says he goes to that stone. Picture this now. Daniel's inside there, probably chopped up to pieces, you know. And at this king, it says in a lamentable voice. That's a big fancy word. That means he's real sad. And with a lamentable voice, he said, "Oh, Daniel, is thy God whom thou servest continually able to deliver thee from the mouth of the lion?" Now, I want to tell you something before we go any further. You got a God who's always able. Your God is able to do exceedingly abundantly above all that you might ask or think. They said, the children of Israel said, "We be not able." Caleb said, "We be well able." Saul said to David, "You're not able to go against that giant. He's a giant. You're but a youth." That's another little boy. You don't call a big boy a youth anymore. God is able. The walls fall and the giants fall and troubles fall because God is able. O Daniel, is thy God whom thou servest able to deliver thee from the mouth of the lion? From inside, you know what, I don't think he was expected to hear anything. But from the inside of that den of lions, there comes a voice, and it's Daniel. The king recognizes his voice. O king, live forever. My God sent his angel, and he stopped the mouths of those lions. Wonder how Daniel spent that night. I just like to think about these things. I go wild in thinking about these things. You reckon he's sitting over in the corner shaking all night? Well, he might have been the first minute or two. I don't know. I would have been. Maybe as the night progressed and those kitties are over there purring, he might have gone over and petted them. You reckon? God, is it okay if I pet one of them? They look kind of friendly. I don't know why I get off on all that. That's not of the spirit. That's of Winfrey right there. But I just would have left him in a fly. No, I wouldn't want to be a fly on the wall in that lion's den. But anyway, Daniel's A-okay as an old man. We go back to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and I'm running out of time. Now, they're middle-aged, I'm guessing. And the king makes a new rule. You don't bow to anything but my statue I built. Now, what's that statue? The way I got it figured, if I'm doing my numbers right, it's about 90 feet tall and about 6 feet across. 6 feet across. 90 feet tall. That's a 9-story building. You know what that thing is? It's a big, tall pencil sitting out there in the field. And that's God. Well, anybody knows better than that. That's nothing but a big overgrown pencil. Well, you better bow to it. I'm not bowing to anything but my God. And he's not a pencil. I don't care how big he makes it. And that king, his fury is raging. He said, I'll give you one more chance, boys. When the band plays, you better bow. Or you're going in that fiery furnace right over there. And you know what they say? They said, O king, we're not careful to answer you in this thing. That means we're not full of cares. That means we really don't care. Well, that's a good attitude, isn't it? I don't mean they don't care about anything. They don't care about what might happen to them. If it be so, if our God's willing, if it be so, our God is able to deliver us from that fiery furnace. And if it's not so, if he doesn't, we still not going to bow. And oh, the king just thought he was mad. Now he's really mad. They turn up that thermostat 7 times hotter. I guess they broke the knob off of it. I never saw a thermostat was 7 times hotter than you ought to turn it up. It shouldn't have gone that far. So I don't know how they did it, but they turned it up 7 times hotter than it was supposed to be turned up. And it's so hot that the guards burn up when they're walking towards it. I guess those boys just got in on their own at that point. Ever thought about that? Sometimes I think too much. Well, anyway, they wasn't full of cares. The king said, go. And our God's able, so he just jump on in. So, well, I got a picture. And that king said, didn't we put 3 in there? Yeah. Well, who's that fourth one that looks like the Son of God? I don't know. I knew him. But that's who it was. It was the Son of God, Jesus Christ, right in that fire with him. When you go through the fires, he'll be with you. Middle age. Old age, youngins, purpose of heart. Handfuls of purpose. Way long time, before that time, way back there was a, now she was a young girl. Well, she wasn't a young girl. She was a young lady. And her name was Ruth. And Ruth fell on hard times. She really did. You see, this family had come from Israel into her land, and she fell in love with one of the boys. And she married him. And the family that came, it was Mama and Daddy and these two boys, and she's married to one of those sons in that family. And the daddy died. And there was another local girl that had married the other boy, but both the boys died. And now there's 3 widow women. There's old woman Naomi. And there's these two young ladies, Ruth and Orpah. And Naomi's old, and Naomi's mad. And Naomi's been mistreated, she thinks, by her God. And she just seems like to me wants to find a place and die. You can kind of get that way. And her two daughter-in-laws try to encourage her, and she said, just go on back to Mama. You don't need me. I've got nothing for you. I'm a loser. And Orpah, after a long conversation, she turns and goes back to Mama. And Ruth said, entreat me not to leave thee. Don't ask me to go back to my family. You're my family. Entreat me not to leave thee or to return from following after thee. Where you go, I'll go. Where you live, I'll live. Your people will be my people. Your God will be my God. And where you die, I will die. And these two women head back to Israel. Naomi's her mother-in-law. Some might say that's one strike against you. Now, I've got one good mother-in-law. She's a baby. So if anything gets back home, I said something good about my mother-in-law. But Ruth's mother-in-law was a bitter old woman. And I doubt if she was much good company. But Naomi and Ruth go back together. She said when they got home, they said, oh, there's Naomi. That means pleasant. She said, that's not my name anymore. Don't ever call me that again. You call me Mara. That means bitter. I'm a bitter old woman. And Ruth goes out to try to find food for herself and for her mother-in-law. And she ends up in a rich man's field. His name is Boaz. Boaz takes notice of her. Ruth had purpose of heart to stick with her mother-in-law. Boaz developed some purpose of heart. In chapter 2 of that book, about verse 9, he tells Ruth, he said, when you get thirsty, you just come and drink out of the bucket that the farmers are drinking out of. Don't you go thirsty, sister. And then he invites her to his table at lunchtime. And she sits down, and he reached her parched corn. And she ate at his table till she was satisfied. And she goes back into the field, and Boaz grabs his field hands, and he says to him, you see that one right over there? Yeah, that one. When you're out in front of her gathering in the grain, said every once in a while, drop her a handful of purpose. A handful of purpose. That means on purpose. Drop some of the grain right in front of her. So she'll get an extra dose. Well, can you see her out there? Now, if I was out there looking for a piece here and a piece there, you know what you do when you do it? You keep your nose to the ground. You're like a bird dog. You're looking close and smelling for it and looking for it because you've got to have it because mama-in-law's hungry and you're hungry and she's looking. And all of a sudden, she hadn't seen what happened right up there in front of her. You know, sometimes they drop without us seeing it. And right there, she comes to a place and, my goodness, do you see that? And she starts... And she just, and a few steps down further, there's another one, and another one, and another one. And all across that field, there's handfuls of purpose. Well, any storytelling that doesn't finally get to Jesus has not purpose in it. I want to tell you something. You got a Jesus that's got purpose of heart. He has purpose in his heart that you can come and have handfuls of purpose while you're still here in this world. Like on a Saturday afternoon when you come and somebody feeds you out of God's Word and drops a few handfuls of purposes right in your lap. Or when he says, I'm out there knocking. And if anybody will come and open that door, I'll come in and sup with you, church. That's a Jesus with a purpose to give handfuls of purpose. When he was here, he purposed, and said he raised his hands and blessed him. And he reached out his hands and touched him. Those are big hands. You know what? If you've got a handful, and you've got Jesus, you don't need much else. That old widow woman, That preacher man, he comes up to her and he said, make me a cake. She said, I don't have a cake. All I got's a handful of meal. And that boy of mine, we're going to fix a cake and we're going to eat it. We're going to die. And he said, make me the cake. And there was always a handful in that barrel. It never ran out. Jesus gives us a handful. You know what you're part of? You're part of a handful that he has a purpose for. You know what he said? I give unto them eternal life, and they'll never perish, and no man can pluck them out of my hand. I reckon if nobody can get them out of your hand, they out of his hand, you're in his hand. And he's got a handful. I don't know how big the handful is. He got a big hand. He can hold, I don't know how many people from every nation, kindred, tribe, and tongue under earth, all over this world, all through history. That's a big hand, isn't it? Well, he's got them all, and nobody can get one out of that hand. He's got a handful, and he's got a purpose for us. Oh, one day at the dispensation of the fullness of times, that pierced hand that he showed to them and proved who he was. And holding you in that hand, you're never going to get out, and nobody can get you out. And at the dispensation of the fullness of time, his purpose is going to come to pass that he's had from before the foundation of the world. We're going home because we're part of a handful and because Jesus has a purpose. Purpose of heart. Handfuls of purpose.